Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Ken Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from Augmented World Expo 2026, storytelling is one of the things that continues to be one of those areas that I think are super compelling. Specifically mentioned by Ori Inbar in his keynote was immersive video. It seems to be on the rise in terms of what's happening in the broader XR industry. To go back, 360 video was there from the very early beginnings of consumer VR, this kind of modern revolution. However, it was something that was always kind of diminished by the broader XR industry just because it was seen as like not being quote unquote real VR because it wasn't agency, you had no interactivity or participation. But as it continued to develop as a form of cinema, kind of an outreach of the cinematic tradition, and I feel like there's so many different lessons that have been learned through lots of different pieces that I've seen over the years, and that the USC School of Cinematic Arts has this whole new Gannick Immersive Studio, which is providing grants to different students, both within the USC School of Cinematic Arts, as well as with like the student body at large. They're basically providing opportunities for people to make a pitch to be able to then go make an immersive video. With the Mapple Immersive Video, that's one of the different major new outlets for these different types of content. And most of the different content that's been done over the years has been mostly, I'd say, documentary rather than like scripted or narratives. But for USC, you have a lot more folks that are interested in pushing the edge of what's possible to tell stories in more of a narrative fashion. And so one of the pieces that I saw there that I really quite loved was called Elevator by Lilith Glincher. And so, yeah, just some real kind of novel immersive theater background that makes you feel like you're being transported through a bit of a fever dream of this world that you don't quite understand the logic of the rules. And so you end up having these really close one-on-one intimate interactions, but also kind of be drawn through this whole foggy, mysterious world that has some sort of logic to it that you kind of figure out through the end, but it does feel like a bit of a fever dream as you're watching it. So yeah, just very immersive in terms of the different types of experiences that I haven't seen something that was that quite stylized in the industry so far. So it was really great to see some of these different student projects that are really pushing the edge of what's possible with storytelling with immersive media. So I had a chance to talk to Nathan Fairchild of the Gannick Immersive Studio. He's helping to kind of lead up this whole immersive studio. So it was really fascinating to have a chance to sit down with him and to see a couple of the student projects. And yeah, hopefully they'll find ways to make these more widely available for folks to be able to check out. So I think that's one of the kind of frontiers for where they're at right now, which is just that, some really incredible work that's happening right now. And so how do you provide an opportunity for people to actually watch it and see it beyond what's been happening in the film festival circuit? So yeah, really quite interesting to see some of the different developments, but also to kind of think about the language of cinema and how that's being expanded in different ways with all the different dimensions of XR. So yeah, we cover all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Nathan happened on Thursday, June 18th, 2026 at the Augmented World Expo in Long Beach, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
So I'm Nathan Fairchild. I'm assistant director of the Gannick Immersive Studio, which is a creative studio at the USC School of Cinematic Arts that is all about making immersive media projects. I went to USC as a grad student in the cinema school, very focused on telling VR narratives, and transitioned over to staff when I graduated. And we're running this studio making about 8 to 10 immersive projects every year with students at the School of Cinematic Arts.
Great. Maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Yeah, I started off when I was younger. I did a lot of stuff with audio and music and sound design. And when I got out of undergrad, started dabbling in film. And that very, very quickly turned into an obsession with immersive film and VR. And so spent a little bit of time learning the ropes and dabbling in my basement in New York, learning how to make some VR material. And I said, well, be nice to have a community around this, and it seems like there's some interesting stuff happening at USC. So I went to USC for grad school and was a little bit of an oddball there because I tried to make every single project I could a VR project. So for the last several years, that's been my primary focus, but super happy that VR has been growing at USC, VR filmmaking in particular, and more folks are trying their hand at it.
Yeah. And so what was the first encounter you had with either immersive 180, 360 video, VR?
Yeah, so I remember, you know, I got to VR a little late, which is to say, like, it wasn't on my radar in, like, 2016 when Oculus was first coming out and popular. I think I discovered VR for the first time late 2018 or early 2019. But I went back and checked out a lot of those early cinematic VR pieces. You know, I remember Clouds Over Cedra and stuff like that from that time. And I said, wow, there's something here that's really interesting. And it seems like it's still being born. And, you know, every piece is doing something a little bit different. And I don't know where this will end up, but it seems like something to be explored over the coming years and decades. So went on from there. And, you know, I love both interactive VR projects and cinematic VR projects. I'd love to see in the near future some sixed-off cinematic VR as Gaussian splats get more mature. But I'm happy to see Apple entering the world of XR. Apple immersive videos are looking really beautiful on the Vision Pro. So although VR ebbs and flows a little bit, we're excited about the future of storytelling in VR.
Yeah, maybe you could give a bit more context to, is it the Gannick Immersive School? Or what's the name of the school and when did it start?
Yeah, so we're at the USC School of Cinematic Arts, which is to say USC Film School. And inside of the film school, we have this little creative studio called the Gannick Immersive Studio. So we're funded by a private donor, the Gannick Family Foundation, run by David and Danielle Gannick. We also have some support from Apple with our gear. And we basically are open to all students at the university. We mostly work with cinema school students, but we're open to students from across the entire university who want to try their hand at immersive media. So we largely function like a grant opportunity. Students can come pitch ideas for immersive projects to us. We're able to select 8 to 9 to maybe 10 per year that seem like they could be fruitful, give these teams a small budget and teach them the ropes, get them some gear and get the projects made.
Great. And it seems like that immersive video, 360 video, from the perspective of a lot of like hardcore VR people, wasn't even considered to be true VR because you didn't have interactivity and didn't have agency. But I think they were mostly coming from a video game tradition where you expect that type of interactivity. But I've always felt like the 360 video, 180 video is more from the cinematic tradition, which doesn't expect you to have any type of agency. And so it's a lot of people that were like just really against things like Oculus Go that were really optimized for 360 video, but then didn't do the interactive game stuff as well. And so I would see the Oculus Go at a lot of these different film festivals. And so I think the film festival community has really kind of helped to maintain and foster the community of 360 videos because there wasn't really ever great distribution for it. It was maybe YouTube had some stuff, but it was never really monetized in a way. And so there were maybe like Felix and Paul could have their own app, but the business model and the revenue was never really prioritized as a thing that was worth any money because there was the Oculus TV where a lot of that video was just acquired and then it was free for all the audience. And so audience was sort of like skipped over into this model of, hey, this is going to be just like Netflix, but we're going to give you the Netflix, but it's going to be free. But that basically starved out all of the producers because they weren't able to make any money. But now we're at this point with Apple and Apple Immersive Video where it's sort of like flourishing. And that's actually one of the industries that seems to be growing in a way, but I don't know what the business models are, but just trying to get a sense from your perspective of how you start to tell the story of like immersive video of it's kind of had, you know, deprioritized for the most part of the history of the last decade in VR, but now it seems to have a bit of a renaissance right now with the Apple Vision Pro and with what you're doing there at USC, having much more opportunities for things like the domes and the sphere and Cosm as another outlet for some of this content, but just pure 180 video and Apple immersive video seems to have like some momentum. So just curious to hear your take on how you make sense of what's happening in the industry.
Well, it's certainly been great to see Apple really embrace cinematic immersive storytelling. That was a nice surprise because there was a real trough for a while, as you mentioned, where there really wasn't much happening. And yeah, I think, you know, the culture around VR largely is prioritized sixed-off interactive game engine-based pieces. I love that stuff too. You know, I think my frustration coming a little bit more from a filmmaker mindset is, you know, no one in the VR community is poo-pooing real-time interactive VR. So to see the other side, which is, you know, cinematic narrative, getting poo-pooed, it's kind of a bummer. It's like, you know, VR gaming is incredible, but I think we can also, when at the times when we want to be told stories, you know, cinematic VR experiences can be incredible as well. The thing I miss the most with cinematic VR that I wish was different is I would love to see the 180 cinematic VR pieces start to be sixed off as some technologies like splats become more mature and approachable and affordable. But, you know, to see that coming back a bit and to see people trying their hands with it and the beauty of the display on the Vision Pro and that Apple's fostering that ecosystem all has been pretty encouraging. You know, I start people off if they have no idea what I'm talking about and they've never tried this. I just put them in a headset and show them some examples. And, you know, most of the people I talk to who are open-minded and who are willing to give it a try have really powerful, visceral experiences. So I certainly think that cinematic VR is maturing. It's growing. I think there's a future there. We're all really bad at guessing when things are going to happen, but I think it's moving in a fruitful direction for sure. And I'll mention, you know, I think it's like, I've thought of it in many ways as like a step past IMAX. And, you know, people by and large don't question IMAX. They're like, oh, it's great. You know, it's filmmaking, but a bit more immersive. And it's like, well, you know, I think for many of us, this is just one step past that. And I think a lot of interesting stuff to be done with that.
Yeah. So because you're at the USC Film School, this Gannick Immersive Studios inside of that, seems like there's a lot of folks coming from that cinematic tradition. And I feel like that the immersive 180 video, there's, you know, still a lot of, I guess, open questions as to what is unique in terms of the cinematic language that is unique to the 180 format. Considerations where you can't have like camera shake or the way that you move, yaw rotation, things that is going to make the audience sick. And there's going to be potentially things that work in the immersive video that don't work as well in the flat version of film editing. So just curious to hear you, how you start to navigate, like what's unique and what's different versus what's the same in terms of what you can adopt and import. And maybe this is kind of an ongoing exploration, but just curious to hear how you start to make sense of that. And if there's theorists or people who have started to kind of like document certain things like that.
Well, I think we could do a better job of documenting it. Most of the documentation is in the films themselves that we wind up with. But I think, you know, every project we really push to experiment and, you know, we spitball with the students, like, what are all the things we can try out that maybe is new territory that we haven't tried out before? And, you know, there's certain affordances with VR that are interesting, of course, with perspective. There are a lot of things that can be explored with perspective. One of the films you just watched, Kent Elevator, tells most of the story from the third person. And then in the final act, the story switches to make you a character in the first person. We have another project, a performance improvement plan that is entirely in the first person. I should mention the filmmakers on those projects, too. So we have an amazing student, Lilith Glimcher, who made Elevator and comes from an immersive theater background. And Jinrun Han made a performance improvement plan. And we love both of those projects. But other things, you know, you mentioned camera movement, editing. There's so much to be explored with stuff like that. I mean, when you start moving the camera in VR, you create a visceral physiological response, you know, to the human body of the viewer that is not the case when you're watching something on a screen on the other side of the room. So every time we're experimenting with a new technique with editing or when and how we're moving the camera or how we approach perspective in the piece, we try to do a lot of testing. We don't want to really strike anything off the list except a few things like panning and tilting the camera, rotating it, we usually say is a no-no. But a lot of things we say, okay, let's leave it on the table and let's do a lot of testing and let's see how it feels. And a lot of the time it's, does it pass a physiological test on the human body? And then there's questions of, does it pass the aesthetic test and does it have the impact on the narrative that we want to see?
Nice. And so just curious to hear from your perspective of, as students are going through making projects in the studio, what kind of opportunities are available for them coming out of this in terms of how do you make sense of what's happening in the industry of either job opportunities for where they might go work or distribution opportunities for where some of this type of content may end up? Because distribution has always been a huge problem, but also it seems like, as Orion Barr put in his keynote, that immersive video seems to be one of those sectors that is growing right now.
Yeah, you know, in terms of distribution, we're seeing some different streaming platforms pop up on Vision Pro, which is great. There's the theater app, which we particularly love. There's Acute Immersive. There are these platforms popping up for distribution that are exciting. And so we're working to get our films streaming on platforms like that so that more of the public can be seeing these pieces. As for jobs in the industry, you know, I wish I had better hard numbers, and I should have better hard numbers, but it seems to me, it may just be our network growing over time, but there seem to be more opportunities coming to us. And as more people are working with platforms like, you know, the Blackmagic Ursa Cine Immersive, as more people are trying their hand with storytelling for Apple Vision Pro, we see more and more productions and people reaching out to us and saying, hey, you know, we're trying to crew up for this project. Most people don't have experience shooting immersive. Do you have any students or people in your network that you can recommend to come and work on a professional set doing this? So we've been really happy to see that. That's only been growing over the last couple of years that we've been around. So that makes us hopeful too.
Nice. And so what's next for the Gannic Immersive Studio?
Good question. We want to do a couple of things. One is we want to, for some of our longer form projects, we want to really expand and draw out the production timeline on those projects and give students an entire semester in production, an entire semester in post-production, and really make even more polished pieces, aiming at some festivals for immersive. And then I also want to see us making a lot of much shorter form content that's maybe straight to the internet, that is just experimenting with simple ideas. I want to see some really short form short films that are fun and playful and maybe have a single idea that they're testing for immersive storytelling and immersive film. And I'd love to see us churning those out very steadily and having a shorter production cycle on those. So I'd like to see us doing both at once. We're going to try to be doing that over the rest of the summer and into fall and for the future to come.
Yeah, and there was a piece that was at South by Southwest a couple of years ago that was a 180 video that's hyper-stylized. And one of the things that I took away from that was that there's a lot of things that the 180 video is a lot more like the cinematic language than like 360 video. You can treat it a lot more like in terms of camera movement and stylization and cutting and editing. But also, there seems to be a different emphasis where 360 video seems to emphasize the world that you're in. And if you want to focus the world, then that tends to be better. But if you want to focus on individuals, especially human faces, I think that 180 video tends to do a lot better job of capturing the human face and expression and emotion, especially because 360 video, stereoscopic especially, doesn't do well when you have people too close to the camera. And so it seems like the 180 video can replicate different aspects of intimacy that you find with being around other people, which I think when I watch a piece like Elevator, I get this sense of this parasocial intimacy that I'm getting from those characters that I wouldn't necessarily get as much in a film, but I just feel like I'm more immersed. And so I feel like I'm more co-present with them as a third person, as this kind of ghostly like character that's not being addressed, but more just kind of bearing witness. But I'm able to see the subtle nuances of emotion that I think video in the cinematic 180 does way better than you could ever imagine in the sort of CGI version. And so in terms of emotionality and human expression, that was one of the big takeaways of just watching Elevator. And you had asked around the differences between 360 and 180. But yeah, just curious to hear some of your thoughts and reflections on the different formats.
Yeah, it's interesting. Wow, I have a lot of thoughts on this. You know, you were talking to me before we started this about, you know, place and environment and how large that looms, particularly in 360. I think it also does in 180. You know, like one thing I didn't mention a minute ago, but is part of this world of immersive storytelling is production design and the world and the setting. And, you know, one thing I'm always talking about on all these productions in our studio is like treat the place almost like it's one of your main characters. Like, treat it as being as important as your protagonist. Because, you know, having an orthostereoscopic experience where you really feel that you are in an environment, it really does almost become a character. And when it's treated as such, with a lot of attention to detail, and or playfully, and or dynamic, when the environment around you changes over the course of the experience, that can create a really dynamic, powerful experience. I think you're right that that's not quite as dialed up in 180 as it is when you're in a 360 format. I will say, you know, for cinematic narratives, we have been embracing the 180 format largely because, well, for a few reasons, but it becomes so much more practical on the production side. You don't have to run and hide the crew and the director in some other room. You can light with film lights if you need film lights and not just practicals. It becomes such a more viable operation. But I think also, you know, when you're telling more linear stories, I find people get tired, myself including, with looking over your shoulder every few seconds in a 360 format. So I think for those reasons, oftentimes storytelling is great with a 180. It is like you're taking something more in the vein of 3D IMAX, and you're stretching that out, and you're covering the field of view, and you're giving full immersion, but you're getting rid of some of the really, really persistent challenges that have dogged 360 filmmaking for many years now.
Nice. And so finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of immersive storytelling might be, and what it might be able to enable?
Well, I think one thing is what you said a minute ago about really closeness and intimacy with characters in stories. People often think that's not the case in immersive because you're less able to go in for close-ups in the way that traditional filmmaking goes in for close-ups. I'm really excited as immersive video moves into Sixtoff. As things like Gaussian splats mature and become more approachable for indie productions, you're going to be able to get really close to the characters in immersive stories. And, you know, part of the challenge of working in 3DOF is you want to go in close so that the stereoscopy can really start to come to life. But then you notice you're missing that view-dependent parallax. And you notice very quickly that you have the limitations of 3DOF. So I would love, love, love to see immersive video go towards 6DOF. I think it will really start to sing for a combination of not just feeling like you're in an immersive space, but also that you can get really, really close and read all the details and read the subtle body language of the people, the human beings in those stories and in those spaces. So some of those emerging technologies that are just on the horizon, I'm really, really excited about. And I think that they'll push us to the next phase past some of the limitations we've been working with. And I will say those limitations are real. I think, you know, 3DOF has real limitations. As wonderful and beautiful as Apple Immersive Video is, I don't think it's where we're going to be in several years' time. I think we want 6DOF video. And if it can look as good as Apple Immersive Video and push past the limitations of 3DOF that we've had for all these years now, I think it's going to take us to a really, really special place.
Have you seen The Clouds Are 2,000 Meters Up?
I haven't.
Okay. It was a winner at Venice, and it's basically a 6DOF immersive experience where you can kind of walk around, and it's very cinematic in that. So it's kind of like the first one that I've seen that pulls it off, and it was by Singing Chen, the same person who did the Man Who Couldn't Leave, which was also a winner at Venice Immersive. So there are some precedents of it's happening. And also there's a Gracia who has Gaussian splats that are 4D. So kind of moving over time. So there's the technology is getting there and starting to happen, but it's still very early. So, recommend it's one of the hardest pieces to see because it was long and it was at Venice and South by Southwest, but if you can have a chance to check it out, it's definitely worth seeing.
I would definitely love to. I love seeing stuff like that. I don't know if this will happen, but it's an interesting question if, as we move more into 6DOF video, if it bridges these worlds of cinematic VR and real-time interactive, more game engine-based VR a little bit more. And, you know, maybe it'll win over some of the more gaming-focused VR people. I don't know. But I could see some really interesting hybrid situations start to come up where games people and film people start working together a little more closely in XR. I would certainly love to see that. I think we could see more and more really interesting stuff that is drawing from both worlds.
Awesome. And is there anything else that's left unsaid that you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
You know, I'm just happy to see, you know, even as the media, you know, the media loves to proclaim every 18 months or something that VR is dead or something like this. And the people who really love it and care about it seem to continue to soldier on. And I think that's great. And I think that if you zoom out, you know, you see that although we face certain challenges and although we haven't figured everything out around the content, there's more of it. It's higher quality. The community's growing. The audience is growing year by year. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that it's on an upward trajectory. You know, I think we'll see content 5 or 10 years from now that's going to be amazing and more mature than what we're used to now. But there's still great stuff happening now. The audience is growing. More and more creators are cutting their teeth and getting involved in this. And I would say, prove those media stories wrong. If you're thinking about getting involved in this kind of format, do it. You know, it's a small world. People are so friendly. People embrace newcomers to XR. It's really a wonderful community of people doing really, really interesting work. And it's not about to go away. It's only going to get better over time. And I'll thank you, Kent, for I've been listening to your podcast for quite a while, and you've been covering this consistently through all the ups and downs and all the other kind of batty media coverage that's happened over the last 10 or so years. So thank you for keeping the reportage up and being part of a community for so long here.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I think that there's a bit of the VR is kind of a philosophical provocation that's asking us to have a deep paradigm shift to ask us to pay attention to our direct embodied human experience and our phenomenology in a way that is not as emphasized, where most of the way that we have the reductive materialism kind of denies that our experience is kind of illusionary and that we don't actually have it. So there's this kind of interesting, deeper, embodied, immersive experience of people who have actually experienced VR, have a different experience of it, and the people who are saying and declaring instead actually haven't had that direct experience, or they are only looking at numbers in a way that the hyperscalers aren't seeing the exponential growth, and so they're dropping back, and so that means that it's dead. But it's actually kind of like this thing that is organically growing in a way that the seeds are being planted now, even if it's a liminal time of things are ending and new things are beginning and people aren't quite sure for where it's all going, but it seems to be driven by a lot of faith. But that faith comes from their direct embodied experience and knowing that this is going to lead to somewhere.
Yeah. You know, I think if, you know, we look back in history a little while to when, you know, other art forms and media formats were brand new, I think often it took way longer than we realize for those things to catch on. I mean, you know, in the early days of photography, people were enraged at photography by and large because they thought it was putting, you know, a lot of painters, portrait painters out of business and landscape painters, you know, out of work. And it took a while for it to be seen as an art form rather than something that someone with less talent than a painter could steal a painter's job with. And that took a few decades. And similarly, in the early days of, you know, motion picture filmmaking, I mean, it kind of started out as penny arcades, you know, before people made a real business out of it and before Hollywood, you know, sprouted up and became what it became. So I think, you know, with historical perspective, again, if we zoom out, you know, in the first 20, 30 years of a medium really sort of getting out to the public, it often doesn't happen overnight. And so I'm with you. I think that there's growth happening. Yes, there are ebbs and flows and it moves in directions and some things die while other things are being born. But it's in that phase of coming into its own. It may take a while yet to come. It may take another 10 years before, you know, there's wide, really wider public adoption. But there's something here that's not going away, that's just getting better all the time.
Awesome. Well, Nathan, thanks so much for joining me here on the podcast to give a bit more context for what's happening at the Gannick Immersive Studio there at the USC School of Cinematic Arts. And yeah, so it's really exciting to see what kind of projects that the students are doing, kind of pushing the edge and experimenting. And it feels like an opportunity for a lot of wild experimentation to push forward what's happening with scripted narratives in the context of immersive videos. It's really excited to see this kind of experimentation happening. So thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Kent. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast and for keeping the faith for where this industry is going here in the future. I feel like this is a kind of a weird time for everybody in the industry. And if you believe in where this technology may go and that it may be able to bring about positive social change and transformation in the world, then please do consider supporting me here at the Voices of VR podcast, trying to navigate these dimensions of transformation and positive change for where all this might be going. So if you enjoy the coverage that I'm doing here, then please do consider becoming a member at patreon.com/voicesvr. Thanks for listening.